As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
On the pitch, Liverpool took the initiative in the title race.
McAllister, brilliant ball, Salah! And Mo Salah, as so often, Liverpool's saviour.
But off the pitch, uncertainty still remains. We now know that Xabi Alonso won't replace Jurgen Klopp. So who is going to be the next Liverpool manager? I'm Ayewa Kimwelere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. Okay, in for this one, we have The Athletic's David Ornstein as well as Ollie Kay as well. Right, Xabi Alonso is staying at Bayer Leverkusen. And David, no, we all found out about it last week when he did a press conference. Are you surprised, though, that he's staying at Bayer Leverkusen?
Well, first, let's not be wise after the event, because a lot of supporters, members of the public, when we report these things and explain the background that we have learned, they say, well, why weren't you saying that at the time? It's because you have conversations and make checks around these stories and you uncover stuff that you simply didn't know before. And that is that Xabi Alonso's intention was always to remain with Bayer Leverkusen. That had been coming out publicly over the last few months, but it was like nobody seemed to believe it. You thought if he's going to win the league title in Germany, if he's going to go far in the Europa League, then what will there be left to achieve by staying for one more season? Of course he's going to move. And I think many of us got sucked into that. I suspected that a move would come when these big guns come calling, then a manager tends to pack his bags and join one of them. But then when I think it was last week came around, Monday, I was starting to get suggestions that it was very unlikely that he would be joining either Liverpool or Bayern Munich, because that initial intention of staying with Bayer Leverkusen had crystallized in his mind. It had become more firm. It may have been a surprise to the outside world, to the public, but internally at Liverpool, it wasn't a shock, because it now comes to us that this was their understanding for quite some weeks. It doesn't mean they still weren't on top of the situation. Of course, lines of communication remained open. And that was particularly straightforward because Richard Hughes, their incoming sporting director, knows Xabi Alonso's camp very well. He appointed Andoni Iraola to Bournemouth, and Iraola shares an agent with Alonso. And therefore, they were already sort of working on a broader recruitment process, looking at multiple candidates. And Xabi Alonso was not right in the forefront of their mind because they knew what was happening. If he had wanted to leave and he had been keen on joining Liverpool, then it would have been a very different story. And that means that their process can continue without much sense of panic, and they will be confident of completing it in due course and making a strong managerial or head coach appointment when the time is right.
Yeah, we'll definitely go into some of the people that might be sort of being looked at in terms of Liverpool's next potential appointment. But I was just thinking, Ollie, you know, can we give Xabi Alonso some kudos and respect for actually just sticking to his guns and saying, you know what, I'm still young, I'm still figuring out what I'm doing here, even though this is a brilliant season so far, I want to see how far I can go with this job before I start thinking about anything bigger along the line.
Yeah, I think in football, and certainly in the football media, there's just always this expectation that anybody doing a great job at a smaller club, let's be honest, Leverkusen are a big club, but they're a sort of Europa League level club. If one of the sort of big 10 richest, most successful clubs in world football come knocking, and Liverpool are certainly very prominent amongst that, and Bayern Munich as well, that there's just always this assumption that people will go. We in the media almost sort of feed that. And what Alonso has shown, I think, is that you can take a team upstream yourself. And Jurgen Klopp showed that previously at Dortmund. What he's doing at Leverkusen is absolutely fantastic. He's way ahead of schedule in that they look like winning the league this season in year two, which is absolutely extraordinary. Just from what I know of Alonso, from, you know, having met him a few times when he was at Liverpool, and once, you know, at a tournament, I think it was the Euros in 2008 to 2012, something like that. He has always been somebody who is like supremely in charge of his destiny. He's not somebody to be rushed into doing something on somebody else's terms. I'd say that if he went there with a sort of 5-year plan in mind to get, maybe it's the Real Madrid job, maybe it's the Liverpool job, maybe it's the Spain job, who knows? But if he went there with that plan and was thinking, well, I'll get into the Champions League and then I'll compete for the league title and then hopefully win the league title. And if he's ahead of schedule, I don't think he would necessarily rip up that schedule to suit other people's timing. What has come out is that he feels he's still learning and he's not managed in the Champions League yet. And he's not had the pressure. I mean, he's not won the league title yet, but everybody expects him to. But he's not had the pressure of being expected to compete for a league title. He's also, as an incredibly successful ex-player of recent vintage, he doesn't have the financial pressure to jump at the first big job. You see somebody like Andre Villas-Boas when he was at Porto and he was being praised to the hilt and was sent to be this next big thing. And then the Liverpool job, sorry, the Chelsea job came about and it was felt like he couldn't say no, because financially it was like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And he probably, in some ways, regrets that now. I don't think Alonso was ever going to be hurried along to somebody else's timetable of events. I think Alonso is extremely sensible. And I know he moved on during his playing career, moved on from Real Sociedad to Liverpool, moved on from Liverpool to Real Madrid quite ruthlessly in some ways. But he's known as a loyal guy as well. And I think the fact that he has decided to stay with Leverkusen, I don't think it's a bottle job, as I read somebody call it on Twitter the other day. I think it's the opposite. I think it's somebody being supremely confident of their abilities and of their career path.
Yeah, you think about players of recent vintage in comparison as well, David. Frank Lampard, for instance, and no disrespect to him, but you see what happened taking that job at Chelsea as he's still exploring himself as a manager. And also, you know, sometimes, you know, just saying no, let me get this right first before I go on to bigger jobs, is probably a really good idea, because you have a better sense of self and a better sense of how you can coach and manage your teams.
Timing, I think, is everything, and having the courage of your convictions to map out your career, as Ollie has said, but to also stand by that when it's easier said than done and plans don't always follow the course that you intend them to. But he does appear to be very calculated in his moves and self-aware and self-assured that the opportunities will come again, because it is brave to turn down this opportunity now. You mentioned Lampard and some others, but you know, somebody like Graham Potter, when he was at Brighton, was onto a good thing and had everything built around and with him, and they seemed a really good match. And you know you've got to move on at some point. The Chelsea opportunity came up and, you know, they pushed even harder. The size of that compensation fee for Potter and his staff, I'm not sure many other clubs would have paid for candidates. But he took that chance and it went pretty badly wrong. And he was out of a job and has been out since. And Xabi Alonso will be aware of those potential pitfalls. But we've got to look at the stage of his career. It's in its embryonic phase. It's still at its infancy. So he was persuaded to take the B job. The Sociedad position was not, you know, cut and dry. He thought very long and hard about it. He got approached by Borussia Mönchengladbach and decided that wasn't the right path for him. Leverkusen was, but then the environment, and only he knows exactly how well things are set up for him there, what he wants to achieve, never managed in the Champions League. So you're going to have to step into a Liverpool or a Bayern Munich and be competing immediately in very different ways. So at Liverpool, ferocious rivalry from Manchester City, from Arsenal, a resurgent, they would like to think, Manchester United in the next years. Chelsea trying to rebuild. Tottenham are there. Aston Villa too. Little margin for error. The person to follow Klopp, which appears like it would put off a lot of people. We saw at Manchester United post-Ferguson and Arsenal post-Wenger, admittedly in different circumstances, Liverpool have a superior squad, etc. But it is just not easy to step in to the shoes of such a legend. Bayern Munich, many people think it's the ideal time to go there. When they're at a low, you can rebuild. It's likely that they will dominate again very soon, judging by the recent and longer term history in the Bundesliga. But that's not a fact. You know, Dortmund are going to be challenging again. There's a lot of squad issues and politics to sort out at Bayern Munich too. Everybody seems to think he's got Real Madrid on the horizon. We don't know that for sure, but clearly it's another former team of his that think highly of him, and there could be a change with Carlo Ancelotti. There could be changes elsewhere. Manchester City, Pep Guardiola's contract expires in 2025. Whether he leaves then or some point after, it's going to happen at some stage, and various other possibilities. And, you know, sometimes it's the hardest thing to stick where you are and stand by what you had in your head. And, you know, I think Xabi Alonso should be commended for that. I don't think he will go down in anybody's estimations, and I don't think he will really care either. I think this is somebody who appears to be one of the rising stars of world football. We shouldn't herald him as the foremost young emerging manager in world football. If you look at his limited track record so far, it hasn't all been plain sailing, but he is onto a really good thing now. And perhaps he is the most humble of all in these and recognizes that it needs time, it needs patience. He needs to cut his teeth. He needs to take on new challenges. Maybe going again with a team that has been successful is one of them. Knowing that Leverkusen don't plan to sell heavily this summer, another factor. But one thing I would say on Liverpool's behalf is that if Xabi Alonso didn't feel he was right to move yet, then he was not the right person for Liverpool. It had become a coronation on the outside, but it was not on the inside. And they will know how difficult this is, not only for them to make the appointment, but for the person that is going to take on this job and what it entails. It's an enormous responsibility. And it is okay if Xabi Alonso was not the perfect candidate this time round, and somebody else will take it on, may succeed, may not succeed. He may come again in the future. And it is okay if it wasn't right for him this time round. What Liverpool needs to do is get the next stage right. And what Xabi Alonso needs to do is make sure he sees out this season successfully and continues on his career trajectory, because it's really exciting.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwolere. This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ollie, I want to talk about potential candidates for Liverpool. Now, Xabi Alonso for now is out of the running. But I think also I'm really interested to start with, from your perspective, in terms of that new replacement for Jurgen Klopp, is it more about Premier League experience or European success for Liverpool? Because as we've seen in recent history, those are two spaces in which Liverpool have triumphed very well under Jurgen Klopp.
It is, but I mean, Premier League experience, if you look at the three dominant managers in the Premier League at the moment, Jurgen Klopp hadn't managed in the Premier League before, Pep Guardiola hadn't managed in the Premier League before, Mikel Arteta had been assistant manager in the Premier League before, but not a manager. Postecoglou, new to the Premier League. Unai Emery had seemingly failed in the Premier League at Arsenal, but has shown his quality at Villa. Roberto De Zerbi, come to the Premier League and been a revelation in the eyes of many. So I don't think Premier League experience is necessarily the thing. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody like De Zerbi or Thomas Frank or somebody like that was on the shortlist or maybe interviewed or maybe not, but I wouldn't expect them to get the job necessarily. I think De Zerbi is an interesting one because he's clearly an extremely good coach, and you know, you only heard Klopp talking about how fascinating and how brave he finds De Zerbi's teams and how difficult they are to play against. But we alluded to this in a piece we wrote in The Athletic on Saturday, sort of analysing what next. And a number of people have suggested to us that De Zerbi's perhaps not the profile that they would look for in terms of perhaps more from a personality point of view, perhaps more from a strategic point of view. I think he's quite outspoken. He's quite hot-headed in some ways, and I think that's...
Is Klopp not, though, if you think about it, in many respects?
Do you know what? I remember being told, when the Liverpool job first came up after Brendan Rodgers was sacked, somebody told me, and it clearly wasn't on very good authority, because they told me they thought that Klopp would be seen as too strong-headed for FSG. What really came across, apparently, in that interview, and definitely came across, certainly probably more the first few years he was at Liverpool than the last couple of years, is that he really is very much a sort of team player, Klopp. And although he's this big personality, he was very much brought into that. You know, he didn't want to be this all-powerful manager, certainly not in those early years. He'd worked with the sporting director, Michael Zorc, at Dortmund, very respectful of that position and of others' expertise in recruitment and things like that. I think he's probably become more authoritative as years have gone on at Liverpool. So I think for that reason, De Zerbi less likely. I've seen Thomas Tuchel linked. I think perhaps less likely for the same reason. People like Antonio Conte, who are incredibly successful managers, out of work, aren't even figuring in this conversation for that reason as well. More sort of volatile, less collegiate, consensus-seeking figures. So Ruben Amorim at Sporting is the person who, I mean, he's the bookmaker's favourite. I'm looking at the list now. He's quite comfortably the favourite. But at this point, I would say he looks like the strongest contender, but not very much is seeping out in terms of that. People have said at Liverpool that he ticks a lot of boxes.
Yeah, David, that brings me to an interesting point, actually, because doesn't this say a lot about where we are with the managers currently on the market, and especially for a team like Liverpool, what takes more priority, really? Someone maybe like Tuchel that has had experience in both spaces, or yeah, let's go completely wild. Let's get that data to do the work for us. And also, how important will that data be to who they appoint next?
Yeah, that brings us on quite nicely to the process. So integral from the beginning of this has been Liverpool's director of research, Will Spearman, who was the successor to Dr. Ian Graham in that position. And whether Liverpool are signing players or recruiting managers, the metrics, the analytics are absolutely fundamental to how they do it. And so he has and will be, along with his team, core to this appointment. Of course, they didn't have all of their key executives in position when it was announced that Jurgen Klopp would be leaving, because with him went Jörg Schmatke, who left after the January transfer window as sporting director, which was a relatively short stint in that role. And since, Michael Edwards has joined FSG as their CEO of football and essentially appointed Richard Hughes as the sporting director. Now, those two working together may tell us a little bit about the direction of travel without a clear picture on where it will end up, because one, you would suspect it is not going to be a figure like Jurgen Klopp, unless they can convince him to stay, which isn't going to happen, because there aren't many of those around. And also, you would assume without any animosity that the way Klopp had built, especially post-Edwards departure as sporting director, sort of power and authority and control over recruitment to the extent that Schmatke even said on the record that he was coming to Liverpool to support Jurgen Klopp, then they might go a slightly different direction, more the head coach model, whether it's called head coach or manager, we'll have to wait and see. And look at who Hughes has gone for in the past. Of course, most recently, Iraola, who I mentioned earlier. He has made attempts in the past to appoint Roberto De Zerbi. And I think that has fueled a lot of the speculation around De Zerbi. My information is that it's incredibly unlikely that they will go for De Zerbi. I'm being told that's not going to happen. And I see the stories continue to propel. I also see that he's heavily linked with Bayern Munich and being on their shortlist. So let's see on that one. Previously with Barcelona, I'm not sure if Barcelona might focus on a Hansi Flick or somebody else. Amorim is definitely in the mix, and his body of work at Sporting Lisbon is really impressive. I think a member of his backroom staff on strength and conditioning used to work at Liverpool and is said to be really important to Amorim at Sporting. I think some conversations have taken place, but every time I've seen suggestions that he is the front runner and the favourite, I'm being given a sense of caution that not that he isn't or will not become, but that there isn't a standout candidate so far. Because of the process, it's been suggested to us that guys like Thiago Motta at Bologna score very well on the data, like Simone Inzaghi at Inter Milan score very well on the data, although there's been some clear suggestions that his English is too limited for a position like this, and also that he might look to be renewing his contract at Inter. Fonseca has done really well at Lille. He's out of contract in the summer, so he will be available. When people like me have mentioned Tuchel, I think it's more that he is available in the summer. It's not that Liverpool are going for him, and I'm not aware of that being the case. Similar with Hansi Flick. Eddie Howe, some have mentioned in dispatches, but as far as we know, he's going to be continuing at Newcastle. And even if he wasn't, despite the clear links to Hughes and Edwards, I don't think that would be the one on this occasion. And these days ahead will be massive for Richard Hughes to finalise and crystallise his thought process on who those leading contenders are. And then they'll need to move forward with conversations. And that's why this is going to be a bit of a slow burner, because it appears that the main contenders are in jobs at the moment. And that was not the case in 2015 when Jurgen Klopp was available. And I think Carlo Ancelotti was the plan B. And I think he was also available. So it's much easier to hold talks and negotiations in those sorts of situations than it is now. And that means Liverpool will have to be patient. It gives more time for Spearman and his team to run the data that you talk about, Io. And then the appointment clearly will have to be made towards the end of the season, at the end of the season, once the season has gone. But that's the path that they are on. And it's a huge moment for Richard Hughes. Let's make no bones about it, because whether it was true or not, whether people like it or not, there was some sort of public expectation around Xabi Alonso. And some will feel that Liverpool didn't manage to land him. Many are saying that whoever they do land now might be a bit of an anti-climax. It won't carry the sort of excitement that that would have. That can't matter to them, and it won't matter to them, because their responsibility is to appoint the best coach manager to take this supremely talented Liverpool squad and team on into the future. Meanwhile, they need to sort out contract situations for Van Dijk, Salah, Trent Alexander-Arnold. But they are in a good place, and they're shaping up for a brilliant end to the season and a really bright future. But be in no doubt, this is an absolutely seismic decision at the centre of it all.
I was just going to say on the data, David, it's really fascinating. I mean, there are so many different metrics that you can look at. One report that really fascinated me the other day, I think it was a piece on Sky Sports that I think Melissa Reddy had done, and it listed this. I can't even remember which of the many data models it is, or many algorithms, but it was one of those which talks about managerial style similarity and about compatibility with squads and this kind of thing. And did you know who the leading contender on that was in terms of similarity with Klopp? Well, it's a name we haven't mentioned yet. It's Sebastian Hoeneß at Stuttgart, who I think are third or fourth in the Bundesliga, and probably, if it wasn't for the job that Xabi Alonso is doing at Leverkusen, I think probably his profile would be higher over here, and probably in Germany as well. Marco Rosa, who is at Leipzig, was next. Then Edin Terzic at Dortmund, which probably tells you that in terms of the way Liverpool play, it's very, unsurprisingly, very German influenced. It's that whole gegenpressing thing, which Klopp has, I mean, not invented by any means, but certainly been a huge exponent of. And I think probably that has spawned a lot of imitations within Germany. Do you know the next name on that list in terms of similarity? Unless you've seen this already, you will not guess.
No.
Well, would you believe that next is Michael Carrick? You know, if Liverpool were as data-driven and as we're led to believe, I mean, and we're completely willing to ignore all other factors, let's say Michael Carrick is, you know, maybe it's about Middlesbrough's playing style, maybe it's about something else, but I'd say in terms of personality, I'd say Michael Carrick is probably the polar opposite of Klopp, and that's not to say they necessarily want Jürgen Klopp Mark II, but it's fair to say I don't think Michael Carrick will be getting that job. But it's just interesting in terms of that sort of similarity. And I know of a championship club which made an appointment recently based largely on one of those sort of data metrics and what they were saying about compatibility with their existing squad. There was a contender who just scored so highly, and it's working out okay. I think Will Stearman and these guys will be looking at data of a level that we just don't have in the media and in the public. So it will be fascinating. And I think as well, as much as we talk about data with Liverpool, I think it's one of those jobs, and particularly post-Klopp, but Klopp has exemplified this. It's one of those jobs where just being a really good technical coach isn't enough. You need to have that connection with the fan base, with the city. I'm not saying it's a unique job, but it's one of those jobs where you definitely need that. And that's why it's such a difficult job to fill.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
After countless steps and more than a few miles, your dog drives you forward one last time to make that final climb. And as the rising sun peeks out from the horizon, you know, incredible happens here because it starts here with the fuel that makes it all possible. Pro Plan Sport. Discover advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours at ProPlansport.com.
This is the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Just thinking about it, Ollie, there's so much has been made about, you know, who's the next man that's going to replace Jurgen Klopp. If you look at it right now, Liverpool currently in the title race, currently potentially could win the Europa League as well. How important is it for the next guy who does come in to hit the ground running?
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool are generally pretty patient with their managers. I mean, if you look at the past that 30 years they went without winning a league title, I think the only manager that was remotely hounded out was Roy Hodgson, who wasn't really accepted from day one. And it was a strange appointment at a time when Liverpool were in a complete turbulence. And I think the fans wanted Kenny Dalglish just as a sort of unifying figure. A lot of managers have gone in there and been quite slow burners, really. Rafa Benitez was a slow burner, which sounds daft to say when he won the Champions League in his first season, but there had to be a level of buy-in with him because there were a lot of difficult times in that first season. Brendan Rodgers, really difficult times in the first season. Klopp even had some difficult times the first season. So did Gerard Houllier. And generally, Liverpool managers have been slow burners. I think maybe the fact that, you know, this would be the first time, certainly in that timescale since probably Graeme Souness, that Liverpool have been appointing a manager from a position of real strength. And so a manager will be expected to go in and hit the ground running because he'll be taking over from somebody who's been performing at an unbelievable standard. Whether they win the league title, whether they win the Europa League or not, Klopp has got this Liverpool team performing at a very high level. So that brings a pressure. And I think maybe if it was Xabi Alonso, there's more of a protection because everybody can see what he is. Everybody has a preconception of what he is. Maybe if it's someone like Sebastian Hoeneß or Ruben Amorim or Simone Inzaghi or whoever, maybe they're seen as more of an outsider and maybe there's less of a buy-in. But I do feel that Liverpool, and I would say the same as Manchester United, to be honest, I think the fan base give their managers time. Maybe not the kind of wild, rabid fans on Twitter, but the fans in the ground, I think we'll definitely give any new manager time.
Perhaps Ollie's point on following Klopp is why the name Pep Linders has lingered for a bit. We're assured that it's not going to be him. And I think there have been some conversations with Ajax and his career is almost certainly going to continue elsewhere. And it does cast your mind to the point of following Klopp and whether some people don't want to do that. It will be really interesting in these conversations, say talks with Amorim and others, whether they are prepared to take it on and brave enough to step in. Because as we've seen with other clubs, you know, it can have a significant impact on your career. I mentioned it with Potter earlier. And so they may see other opportunities elsewhere arising and think that's better suited to me. It's not a foregone conclusion that Liverpool will get who they want. Also, the financials, it's pretty clear that there is a clause in Amorim's contract. I'm told it's around 10 million euros. Some have said it's a little bit higher. It's definitely come down from some of the steeper figures reported. But there's been this sort of consensus of it's only that much money. But that is significant. And whether we like it or not, teams don't pay big money for managers like they do for players, especially in this PSR era as well, where it all goes against your financial balance sheet. Whether Liverpool, and the same with other clubs and their sackings and appointments, are prepared to do that. And so that lends itself to people who are out of work, but there aren't many in that sort of frame when we're looking at Liverpool. I think this appointment, and we may see similar elsewhere, you know, there's been a lot of talk about Erik ten Hag's future at Manchester United and the candidates that seem to be coming to the fore publicly, at least the most, when Gareth Southgate or Graham Potter, these are guys that it's perceived will fit really well with the hierarchy at that club because they know them really well and they'll be able to be on the same page about recruitment and not have this guy coming in doing his own thing. It's all very sort of symbiotic and they're all part of the same team, which of course becomes tough if you one day have to part with that person. But it's why quite a few people have suggested, whether it's the names we mention or anybody else, just keep an eye on the Italian market because Richard Hughes has very close links there. He's going to be the sporting director. We've mentioned some potentials already. There's no guarantee it will end up like this, but it will be fascinating to see if those links fitting in with Richard Hughes and Michael Edwards, somebody that they are absolutely convinced they can all work together with, as opposed to not random, but somebody that just scores well on the data or just ticks boxes around Liverpool's culture and the city and what it stands for, but doesn't quite fit into what they're doing. And then the bravery factor as well. Interestingly, despite me saying I don't think he'll get it, somebody like De Zerbi won't care about following Klopp. They will back themselves. And there are others out there as well. It's one of the best jobs in world football. I don't want to make it sound like it's not to be touched. Quite to the contrary. And it's just whether it will be a success. There's no guarantee on that. And Liverpool will know it. And their fans, I'm sure, will too. What we've seen under Klopp so far is not guaranteed to continue. And if the other clubs are anything to go by, it's often the person that follows the person that steps in for the legend, or maybe even a couple further down the line before you get that back on track. And Liverpool's work in these days and weeks ahead will be doing everything in their power to try and mitigate that and ensure continuity and a successful succession plan, or at least keep themselves competitive in next season and the years ahead.
Yeah, we talked about next season. There's still talk about this season. Jurgen Klopp is still in charge of Liverpool, and Liverpool are 2 points ahead of Arsenal at the top of the Premier League after Arsenal drew against Manchester City. Ollie, are Liverpool... I actually feel this question's going to change every week because it's going to be tight all the way to the end. But at this moment in time, are Liverpool favourites for the Premier League?
Well, yes, they are favourites because I'm looking again at the bookies' odds and they say that they're favourites. I'm looking at the Optus supercomputer, which has had Manchester City as favourites all season. That currently has Liverpool at, is it 45% chance? That sounds very high in a three-horse race. And it was a big swing yesterday in terms of that. I think Liverpool went up from 33% to 45% in the Optus computer. Manchester City coming down correspondingly, and I think Arsenal staying around 18%. And I think what that tells you is that one result can have a really big effect in these things. So if Liverpool, I'm sure every algorithm is based on the assumption of Liverpool beating Sheffield United in midweek, and I would expect them to do that. But if they don't, then I'm sure Liverpool's odds would tumble. If Liverpool go to Manchester United next weekend and are beaten again at Manchester United, their odds will tumble. I think this is a race where, unlike 2018-19, where we saw Liverpool and Manchester City basically faultless in the run-in, and there were no twists and turns. They were so faultless, and it was like watching the most perfect tennis players or whatever, or golf players. I think this is a title race where we will see teams stumble. I look at Liverpool's run-in, I see some banana skin fixtures. I see the same with Arsenal. I see the same with Manchester City. I think the significant thing from the last month and the last two games, the last two match days in particular, when City have played Arsenal and Liverpool, is that City haven't really done what was expected of them. I think everybody looks at City the last few seasons, and City generally perform when the stakes are highest, and they've always got another level to reach. And I think they were way short of that level at Anfield 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. And they were way short of it again at the Etihad yesterday. And credit to Liverpool and credit to Arsenal for both of those performances. But I think we see a situation where Manchester City, they're now 3 points adrift, where they really do now have to raise their game, because they didn't raise the game high enough to close the gap and to seize control when perhaps some of us expected them to. So a roundabout way of saying, yeah, Liverpool might just about be favourites.
Yeah, I'm going to use your words here, David. This is box office at this moment in time in terms of the permutations that could possibly be and who takes the Premier League title. Pep Guardiola, in a press conference, kind of alluded to the fact that, I guess at this point, Liverpool are our favourites. What do you think we learned about Arsenal and Manchester City through that match at the Etihad? Wasn't necessarily blockbuster, but you felt that both teams kind of cancelled each other out.
Yeah, we learned that they have a lot of similarities, actually, which perhaps is no surprise when you look at the two people coaching them, some of the players and the styles. Arsenal, it's very impressive the way that they've matured. They had a couple of hairy moments, but they also had chances to score. They do lack in attack, and that's probably why there could be a striker coming in this summer. Jesus had some opportunities and he's not had the best season by his standards in terms of finishing and also the fitness as well. A point at this point stage of the season is not ideal. You know, they lost the lead of the Premier League table. When you look at who is against, then you think to yourself, okay, that's actually a point gained. It keeps them very much in the mix. I do think they've got the hardest run in on paper and potential slip-ups when you look at away trips to Tottenham and Manchester United in particular. The problem is they're going up against two Goliaths. Manchester City, looking at their fixtures, they've got the capacity to win every one of them. I don't see any match where I think, oh, they're in trouble there. The problem is, and this will answer your point about what did we learn about them, that it's not vintage City this season. Their metrics are down, so that shows it in black and white. Haaland has had another prolific season for club and country, but right now he's not hitting his straps as we know he can. And his all-round game, I think Roy Keane was maybe a bit harsh describing him as a League Two player, but City would like to see him offer a bit more. Kevin De Bruyne's fitness has been obviously a cause of concern this season. Jack Grealish came back from injury yesterday. They have had some weaknesses and Arsenal opened them up on a couple of occasions or were gifted chances to open the scoring. So while fitness concerns and not being at their absolute best, it's just foolish of us to not think that they can't power on through to the end of the season. However, Liverpool are in possession of the lead now, and everything that is thrown at them, FA Cup was a bizarre exception, and I don't think we can read too much into that because they could have won handsomely. But in the league, they are passing all the tests. I think every one of their matches is winnable. You do have to point to 2018-19 season. It was actually February when they played Manchester United away and Everton away. They drew them both. They ended up losing the league to City by a point, and they still play both of those teams away, the Merseyside Derby and Manchester United this coming Sunday. I think Liverpool, riding the crest of the Klopp departure wave and all the emotion around that, the emergence of their young talent, the continued deliverance of Mo Salah and their experienced players, Virgil van Dijk, puts them just ahead of the other two. But it would be folly of us to predict the outcome because there are so many variables that can happen within one game, within one training session that could knock it all off course. But yeah, I think yesterday, and I was there, Ollie, too, we saw Arsenal really arrive at the top table in terms of being able to hold their own in the matches that matter most. They were far more composed than they were at the Etihad in the title run in last season. It was a bit later, but equally we saw a growth that will give Arsenal real confidence, whether it is this season or beyond, that they are now a fixture of the higher echelons of the Premier League, and they appear that they've got the weapons that will make them make sure they're there to stay. They do need to do some work in the transfer market, and I'm sure they will, but their trajectory is really impressive.
All right, let's end it there. David, Ollie, thanks so much for your time, and do not forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does make a difference. Thanks so much for listening, and we are back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Athletic FC podcast. The producers were Guy Clark, Mike Stavrou and Jay Beale. The executive producer was Amy Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. The Athletic FC podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.